Marty Moscowen, welcome to Radio Times. Apple, the most valuable company in the world, and Foxconn, the world's largest maker of electronic components, are facing criticism for the working conditions at Foxconn's factories in China. That includes low wages, forced overtime, and threats to health. The Fair Labor Association has been investigating conditions at those plants that make Apple products, including the iPad and the iPhone. On the eve of Apple's big announcement about its new iPad, we take a look at the human cost of making these popular personal communication devices. We'll also get a preview of tomorrow's unveiling and talk about apps. Apple's App Store just passed the 25 billion download mark. We asked Chloe Albanesius, the managing editor for news at PC Magazine, to join us on Radio Times. And Chloe, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. You wrote about conditions at Foxconn last spring. It's been covered on This American Life, The New York Times, Nightline. Do you think this bad press has helped to improve conditions at these Foxconn factories?
It's hard to tell whether conditions have actually improved over there because we don't often get to take a peek inside. But I guess there's definitely been more press about it, and people are thinking about it more, and it's forced Apple to speak out about it recently with this FLA audit.
These factories are enormous. I've seen pictures. I've seen some video as well. Can you describe what these Foxconn factories just look like?
Well, we got a look recently. Nightline got exclusive access. They went inside, and from what they describe, they're immaculate. No dirt whatsoever. You don't want to get that into the new iPads. But it's just row upon row of people working for hours. And, you know, they're just putting together these machines hour after hour. They have specific tasks. You know, some people put the backs on the iPads. Other people put the cameras in. And, I mean, it really depends on who you talk to as to whether these conditions are, you know, a human rights violation or not.
Well, and there are questions about whether there's forced overtime, or there's even talk about continuous shifts. And part of this is what FLA is looking at. But based on what you've seen, are there serious concerns about working conditions there?
I think it really depends on who you ask, and that's why these audits are going on. Because, I mean, I think us as an American looking in would say, you know, this seems a little extreme, you know, working so many hours, and they live in these dorm rooms, seven to a person. So us looking in would say, I don't really think I'd want to do that. But someone coming from rural China, they consider this to be a good job, because that Nightline special showed thousands of you know, young Chinese people lining up outside in the hopes of landing one of these jobs.
Now, the FLA has been starting their investigations. There are some concerns that because they're being paid by Apple, concerns that they are going to be as direct and honest and as objective in their findings. Do you share some of that concern?
It's definitely come up. I know this another group called Students and Scholars Against Corporate Misbehavior, or SACOM, has alleged that before the FLA came in that some underage workers were hidden. And Foxconn denies that and says they don't really have any incentive to hire underage workers because they have plenty of age workers. But again, it's like we don't really know until we could go in there. And the FLA says that they are objective and that they're going to, you know, be as objective as possible. But, I mean, the FLA did get some criticism recently because he said that, you know, in his inspection, he said that the conditions were first class. And he sort of equated some of these suicides to boredom or monotony rather than poor working conditions.
And we should add, and there much was made of this, of the fact that there were some suicides over the last couple of years, and the company instituted netting, literally netting, that would obviously catch someone if they wanted to commit suicide. And it, you know, it's shocking to even contemplate that. But nonetheless, you've got a lot of people living in dorms, came from rural parts of China, working pretty long hours.
We started to hear about this back in 2010, and at least a dozen suicides, you know, over the past few years. And in the wake of these suicides, the Nightline piece revealed that Apple's Tim Cook actually went to China to, you know, see what was happening, and they did put up these nets, and they created sort of counseling sessions that people could go to if they were feeling desperate. But it, you know, it's been a controversial aspect of Foxconn.
The demand for Apple products is just enormous. I think last year something like 93 million iPhones were sold, 40 million iPads were sold. And I guess there's some question whether, and this of course is a very profitable, valuable company, whether they can use that clout to try to improve conditions in their factories or the factories where these Apple products are being made.
Yeah, they have had a few wage hikes in recent years, I think three since 2010. So, you know, things are slowly improving, but, you know, still people are only making, I think it was $1.78 an hour. So it's, you know, nothing compared to what they might make if they were making these products here in the U.S.
Do you think people that, that love Apple products are doing some soul searching about some of this, you know, news and investigations about conditions at these Foxconn factories?
I think a few people are thinking about it. I saw a little bit of that sentiment on Twitter after the Nightline special air, just people thinking about, you know, do I really want this tablet? And, you know, am I thinking about where it's actually coming from? I mean, if you look at sales numbers, it's obviously not impacting it that much. Right. But I think with all these news stories, at least a few people are thinking about it.
And you think about these first adopters that just, you know, salivate at the thought of a new Apple product.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't seem to deter them at all. I'm sure we'll still see lines for the new iPad in the next few weeks.
And I do want to talk about that. But I also want to just spend a couple more minutes talking about these Foxconn factories in China, because it should be said that while Apple makes its products there, so do other companies, computer companies as well, HP, Dell, and others. Can you speak to that a little bit?
I haven't done too much on the other companies, but, yeah, the Nightline mentioned that there are other portions of the factories where they are making, you know, Dell computers and things, HP as well.
And it's sort of hard to imagine that if these products were made in the United States, that first of all they would be they would cost what they do, but also that there could be the kinds of changes that can be made. It seems almost overnight at these factories, because you've got people that literally are living on dorms right next to a factory.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's like, are you willing to pay a couple hundred dollars more for this tablet to have it made, you know, in a better way? So that's, so far people are not willing to do that. But
right. Well, and I guess time will tell. Of course, there's a new CEO, Tim Cook. There were a number of people that thought after Steve Jobs' death last year that Apple would suffer because of that, but it looks like it hasn't. Do you know why?
Well, I think, you know, people are at Apple seem to be so ingrained with the Apple way, and Tim Cook seems to be carrying that on. I mean, he worked with Steve Jobs for many years, and he talked about that recently at a Goldman Sachs conference he was at, and, you know, said we know how to do things, and, you know, it wasn't all Steve Jobs. I mean, Steve Jobs was gone for, you know, about the last year before he passed away, and, you know, things still carried on. So
Tim Cook also said that workers have a right to safe and safe working conditions and a fair work environment.
He did. He, at that conference, he made somewhat of a lengthy prepared remarks saying that, you know, we care about every worker. It's one of our biggest concerns. And, you know, he pointed to the fact that he had worked in factories as a younger boy. So according to Apple, there it's top of mind.
This is, though, a very secretive company, yes?
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, for a whole host of reasons. You cover, you know, the personal computer industry. Are they dramatically more secret than other companies?
Yes. I mean, access has always been an issue, but, I mean, I think they don't have to really be open, because, you know, people are so anxious to get hold of their products. They really don't have to do much publicity, and people still line up for these gadgets.
And what do you think explains that popularity?
I think they just sort of cornered the market on, you know, design and intrigue, and they make great products. So, I mean, sometimes the products just speak for themselves.
And so the proof, in a sense, is in the pudding. And how competitive is it out there in the world of personal computers and personal communication devices?
It's pretty cutthroat. I mean, Apple's biggest competitor right now is probably Samsung. And, I mean, Samsung's done very well up against them. They had their, Galaxy line of devices, and so they've done very well in the smartphone arena in terms of the Galaxy S line of phones. Samsung also has tablets, the Galaxy Tab, and that really hasn't made quite a dent in the iPad. You know, the iPad still dominates, but everyone's trying. They haven't quite succeeded yet, but we'll see.
Well, and smartphones seem to have just taken over the market.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, most people are upgrading to smartphones now, not feature phones or those flip phones, so it's pretty pervasive.
And you've been covering the computer market for how long?
Consumer tech probably almost 5 years.
And have observed some pretty dramatic changes over those years as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I first started, I had a flip phone myself, and now, I have my iPhone and, you know, watching videos on the phone and watching video on the tablet and connecting all the devices. And, you know, it's really quite a dramatic shift in the last 5 years. So, I mean, it's pretty exciting and also daunting to see what will happen in the next 5 years.
Indeed. And your article about Foxconn was May of last year. What sparked your interest in this part of this story?
I think the human component to it. We often just talk about the gadgets and what works inside, and you know, we rarely stop to think about where these gadgets come from and who's making them and, you know, who's packaging them up and shipping them to us. So I think that the human edge to it sparked my interest.
And even some of the interviews in that Nightline special, the people working the line and being asked, what do you think about while you're doing these repetitive things, putting an iPhone together, putting an iPad together? And one woman talked about, well, I think about missing my children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then, I mean, still the thing is, like, that's still a good job there, because they also went to a nearby village in Chengdu, and, people were living in crowded home and, you know, didn't really have many amenities. And, you know, if they didn't work at Foxconn, they might be, you know, just doing some farming jobs. And, you know, it's, to us, again, it looks, you know, awful, but to them, it's still a good job.
We're almost up in a break here, but what I also found interesting, in order to enter that factory, you had to be de-dusted, I guess.
Yes, very, very pristine. You don't want anything getting into your iPad, I suppose.
Well, and it just shows you how I guess exacting those standards are there.
Yeah, absolutely. Apple standards carry over there.
Well, we are talking about Apple. We are talking with Chloe Albanese. She's managing editor for news at PC Magazine, beginning our conversation talking about some of the criticism of conditions at Foxconn factories. This is the Taiwanese company that produces Apple's products, also produces the products of other computer companies. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation, also get Jared Hill in on the conversation, a web designer, host of the podcast, The Daily App Show. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Delaware's professional acting company, the Resident Ensemble Players, supports WHYY, presenting Our Country's Good, March 8th through 23rd. In 1789 Australia, one man attempts to save spirits and civilize souls through a makeshift stage, a cast of condemned prisoners, and the transformational power of theater. Our Country's Good is an exciting and deeply moving tale of passion and redemption. For tickets, 302-831-2204 or rep.udell.edu.
Mitt Romney pulled off a big win in Arizona and a not-so-big win in Michigan. Today, voters in 10 more states are weighing in on the race for the Republican presidential nomination, and Romney's rivals are looking to claim more victories for themselves. I'm Audie Cornish. Join us for results, reaction, and analysis. Special coverage of Super Tuesday from NPR News.
Tonight at 8 on WHYY.
Fox Chase Cancer Center supports WHYY. Colorectal cancer is the second deadliest cancer in the U.S. It is also one of the most preventable. For most people, successful prevention begins at age 50 with a skilled colonoscopy for the detection and removal of any precancerous polyps. Accuracy is crucial. The gastroenterology team at Fox Chase brings experience and expertise to this important screening regimen. More at foxchase.org. Fox Chase Cancer Center. Hearts plus minds.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowain. We are talking or beginning our conversation talking about Foxconn and Apple. As we all know, Apple has enjoyed some pretty good news recently in terms of its profits. It's also had some bad press looking at some of the harsh and hazardous working conditions at factories in China that are owned by Foxconn, making its popular products. And we are talking with Chloe Albanesius. She's managing editor for news at PC Magazine. In a couple of minutes, we'll be talking with Jared Hill of the Daily App Show. We are talking about both, I guess, the good, the bad, and the ugly when it comes to Apple. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Chloe, let me ask you about the iPad. There's going to be a big announcement tomorrow, and we know how Apple unveils its products with a great deal of drama and expectation. What do you know about the iPad 3?
Probably about as much as you do. At this point, it's all rumors. Apple rarely discusses anything prior to their launch, so we'll know for sure tomorrow, but there's definitely plenty of rumors from, you know, this Retina display to a better camera to, you know, even rumors of perhaps a smaller iPad.
And these rumors, they're just, what, on the Internet?
Yeah, a lot of them come from suppliers overseas. You know, someone will, you know, look at a order form and extrapolate something from that, and a blog will get a hold of it, and, you know, it's all a fun little game until Apple actually announces something.
And it seems this Retina display screen is getting some potential excitement. What would that actually mean if it turned out to be true?
Well, the Retina display is actually already in use on the iPhone 4 and the 4S, and it basically just, you know, the screen is brighter, and you know, if you look at an iPhone 3GS versus an iPhone 4, you can obviously see the difference, and so far it hasn't been brought to the iPad. There's been some talk that it was difficult to scale up to that size from 3.5 inches to 9.7. Apple obviously hasn't talked about it, but that's the general thought. But now people think that they've sort of mastered that, and at least, you know, upgraded the display, if not to Retina display levels, at least a little bit of a bump.
And I know that you polled some of the staffers at PC Magazine about what they wanted in an iPad. What did they want?
Right? Yeah, right. Retina display was up there. And there are also talks about 4G capability. Right now, Apple products are still on 3G. So, you know, they want faster speeds with 4G capabilities for these the iPads on AT&T and Verizon. Some actually did want the smaller size. There are rumors that there's going to have the 9.7 and also the 7.85-inch, kind of like the Kindle Fire. So we're not really sure if that's actually going to happen. I know Steve Jobs said years ago that he doesn't really like the 7-inch form factor. So we won't know if they're actually going to go against Steve Jobs and unveil their own 7-inch iPad, but we will see.
And is Steve Cook going to be doing the honors tomorrow?
Yeah, he will be on stage.
Wearing the blue jeans and black turtleneck?
Yeah, I don't know. He might have his own uniform. Go out on his own.
And lighter, cheaper, obviously, that was one of the things that people wanted as well.
Yes, ideally it would have a lower cost. And so far, Apple stuck to the pricing structure on iPhones and iPads. But if you are looking to save a little money, usually they drop the price of the older iPads by about $100, so you could maybe get an iPad 2 for a cheaper price.
Let me get Jared Hill in on our conversation. He's a web designer, host of the podcast, The Daily App Show. And Jared Hill, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
Good to have you with us. And again, to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Jared, describe The Daily App Show for us. How does that work?
Well, it's a video. It started out as a video podcast. Basically, we wanted to solve the problem of iTunes being the catalyst for finding apps. I knew it was difficult enough to find good music in iTunes, and it would just become the same problem for apps. So we started recording video reviews of iPhone apps right when the iPhone was first able to have apps on it, and we've been doing it ever since.
And Apple, apparently 25 billion apps have been downloaded.
Yes.
I mean, that's a shocking number of apps, yes?
Yeah, that's a huge number. We have reviewed just over 10,000 of those apps.
And do you see trends?
Trends?
Yeah.
Definitely a lot of trends, a lot of people trying to recreate the wheel, and a lot of close copies out there, everybody trying to one-up each other with just one little feature as a difference.
So we're talking about a very competitive environment.
Yeah, we have my employees and I have a joke that every new app is the next Angry Birds. So it's just a little in-office joke.
And is
Did
that...
You know it's
no,
the new Angry Birds.
What's that?
I said, didn't you know it's the next Angry Birds?
Exactly. And is Angry Birds the number one app?
It has been. It's obviously been the one that's gotten the most downloads and the most publicity lately.
Chloe Albanese, you want to weigh in on this about the proliferation of apps?
My iPhone's probably a testament to that. I've, you know, download as many as possible, usually free ones, although sometimes I'll... pay for one.
So how many apps are we talking about, Chloe?
I haven't counted them lately, but not quite bumping up against my Mac, but, at least dozens.
Dozens. And are the mm-hmm. ones that you use, that you go to every day?
Usually the social networking ones, Facebook, Twitter. We use Yammer for work and Google Plus occasionally. Mm. But.
And Jared, do you have a favorite app?
Well, yeah, I would say mostly my social networking apps are probably my favorite. I like to stay connected, and Hootsuite is one of those apps.
And it's called Hootsuite?
Yeah, Hootsuite.
Like Tootsuite?
Yeah, Hootsuite.
Well, we are talking today on Radio Times with Jared Hill. He's a web designer, also host of the podcast, The Daily App Show. Also with us is Chloe Albanese, managing editor for news at PC Magazine. And we're curious about your favorite app. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Jared, let me just ask you one question, because there are some concerns that, and I'm quoting here from Huffington Post, recent revelation from some iPhone and Android apps that they're being uploaded and storing users' iPhone addresses without their permission. And, of course, that would be potentially a violation of a person's privacy. Can you add to that?
Yeah, well, it's kind of a tricky question because obviously a lot of features for finding friends and being able to connect with other people require knowing who those people are. And so... I don't think a lot of these companies are actually doing anything with this information other than just allowing you to connect with your friends. However, the whole idea of having your address book uploaded to, some company's server is kind of a scary thought.
Well, and I would think one needs to know that, to know if this is going on or not.
Certainly, and one of the latest things has been apps uploading photos from your photo library without you knowing. And it begs the question, though, how many notifications or permissions do we need? I can see myself easily tapping accept every time I open every single app. Where do you draw the line,
Chloe, you want to weigh in on that? And then we'll get some callers in on the conversation.
Yeah, I agree. I think that issue definitely made headlines in recent weeks, and Apple actually said that an upcoming software update should fix this, automatic address book uploading. And they said it should, if it happens, it's a violation of its policy, and they're going to make sure that it doesn't happen.
Why this is a company that is so detail oriented? One would think they would know that might happen.
You would think, but there's so many nuances, when it comes to these apps, and just like any other company, they have to roll with the punches when things are uncovered.
Well, we are talking about Apple and apps and personal computers and personal communication devices with Chloe Albanese from managing editor for news at PC Magazine, and with Jared Hill, a web designer, host of the podcast, The Daily App Show. And we want to know about your favorite apps or ones that you might want to suggest to others. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get Faith from Logan Circle here in Philadelphia to join us. And Faith, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, hi.
Hi there.
I own a small company in Philadelphia that makes computer keyboards that switch from an alphabetical layout to a QWERTY layout.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that I'm very interested in is this topic, because I went to the factory unannounced to see what the working conditions were. I would prefer to get my keyboards manufactured in the U.S., but there are no more keyboard manufacturers in the U.S.
Wow.
And so I went to Shenzhen, which is the area closest to Hong Kong in mainland China. And then I took a cab ride an hour and a half outside the city into the factory zone. And I drove for an hour and a half and saw three trees.
Wow.
The sidewalks are all dirt. There's no malls. There's no recreation. All the people that work there are housed in bunks that are sort of like a ship's cabin. And then they work 6 days a week. But since they don't have any recreation options on their day off, there's nothing to do, and they don't have, most of them don't have cars. And even if they did, the sidewalks are all dirt, so it's very hard to walk.
And Faith, so, are these the people that are making your keyboards?
Yes. I mean, I wanted to see if they were, if they had a clean toilet, if they were given some breaks, and if there were, you know, no children or pregnant women working in the factory. And the factory did meet those basic standards.
Mm. So are you satisfied with that, or it sounds like you're still troubled?
I'm troubled by it. That's a good way to put it. Because, I mean, what's it's done for me personally is every time I buy something from China, I know that I'm buying something made under these very poor working conditions, which are almost akin to slavery. I mean, the slaves in this country, in New Orleans, the French only had them work 6 days a week, and it's kind of a similar thing to the working conditions in these factories. So it's troubling morally, and I just don't think it's any way to live.
Well, and I appreciate your honesty. Appreciate the call to Radio Times. Jared, let me give you a chance to weigh in on this. We were talking about this with Chloe earlier in the hour.
Well, I agree. I, you know, like anybody, would love to see everything made, you know, on our soil here, but obviously there's reasons that decisions are made, and it's kind of up to us as American consumers and citizens to kind of decide, you know, where to draw the line when it comes to, you know, the working conditions in which our products are made. I mean, remember the whole Nike issue.
Sure.
Years ago, you know, is Apple gonna, you know, fall under the same scrutiny, or how is, it's kind of interesting just to see this all pan out.
But it is also interesting to think about the kind of demand for these products, and whether those people with that demand can apply some kind of pressure on the company that they love so much, Jared.
I'm sure they can. I mean, obviously, you know, they've got quite a bit of employees over there producing a lot of product, and if, you know, those employees were to do something like strike, I mean, we've seen that happened before here on our soil and with other companies. So it would be interesting to see what would happen there.
And Chloe, we should say that the Foxconn is not a mainland China company. It's a Taiwanese company.
Yes, it's based in Taiwan.
It's based in Taiwan, but what, and most of their factories are in China. They're also in other countries around the world as well.
I believe so.
Let me get some more callers in on the conversation at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Jared, let me go back to you and talk a little bit more about apps and some of the innovations, and even we were mentioning trends earlier, but some of the innovations in apps as well. Are the social network apps, are those the ones that seem to be growing in popularity?
Well, the iPhone has seemed to kind of be the leader with, you know, integrating social into everybody's lives. If you're into social networking and being, you know, connected on the go, typically the iPhone is where the apps come out first. You know, there's a lot of interesting apps like Instagram that's been really exploding over the last year, which is a photo sharing application, and that's nowhere to be found on other devices, and so you end up seeing a lot of apps start out on the iPhone, and then, you know, they become an Android app, and then maybe they become a Windows app.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously Apple is empowering a lot of people to get creative and create some interesting apps for their platform.
And is the future of the internet all about apps?
You know, I think that eventually something will have to change because, you know, the next big thing will come eventually. But apps obviously make it a quick and easy way for you to connect with something. However, many of these apps are simply ports of a web interface, especially the social network, a lot of the social networking apps. It's just a more convenient way for us to launch into whatever we're trying to get accomplished.
And Chloe, you mentioned the fact of the many free apps that you have. Obviously, there are choices between free and paid apps. Is that competitive?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, people definitely are okay with purchasing apps. As you can see, the top 50 apps are tons of paid in there. But, you know, that's a great way for developers to make money. You know, it's a lucrative business, and, you know, if you can make some money on it, why not?
Sure. And developers, Jared, to you, developers obviously seeing some opportunity, and how competitive is it between potential developers?
It's really competitive. There are so many apps that are very similar in the App Store, and people are competing to try and obviously get a lot of attention, and that's one of the things that our website we try to help with is, you know, kind of let these app developers get their apps in front of a larger audience. But the problem is that there's so many of the same app, and
right.
It's how do you decide which one's right?
And also having that fresh new idea, as you said, everything is about trying to clone Angry Birds, right, Jared?
Yeah, that's our running joke. It is. Everybody seems to be producing an app that's very similar to another app that already exists, but maybe has one additional feature. And that's obviously, you know, happens in many industries, copycat products, but. Mm. There, every now and then, there is something, you know, really revolutionary that gets a lot of attention.
And I would think users are demanding and discriminating at the same time, Jared.
Yeah, very true. Obviously, people can leave comments and rate apps, and if apps come out that's just a blatant copy of another app, which Apple frowns upon, but then again, if one or two little features is the difference, it will make its way through. But the users typically revolt, especially if the app that's being copied has a close following. Even Angry Birds was a copy of, well, not an exact copy, but a close copy of another game.
Well, let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation talking about apps, Apple products, personal computers, personal communication devices. Jared Hill is host of the podcast, The Daily App Show. Chloe Albanese is managing editor for news at PC Magazine. And we want to know about your favorite app. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Peggy and Steve Morgan of Marlton support WHYY and encourage listeners to visit the Philadelphia Zoo. The zoo is pleased to announce the arrival of their jaguar and snow leopard cubs. Tickets available online at philadelphiazoo.org.
Drexel supports WHYY. If you are at least 20 pounds overweight, you may be eligible to participate in a research study called the ENACT Project at Drexel University. This year-long weight loss study is funded by the National Institutes of Health and is designed to help adult men and women lose weight and keep it off without medication. Guidance from weight loss specialists at group meetings is included. For more information, 215-762-8400. 215-762-8400.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. It's Super Tuesday. We'll check in on the turnout, but also get historical perspective on this unusual year. Also, GM suspends production of the Chevy Volt, partly because of disappointing sales, partly because of battery questions. What does this mean for the future of electric cars? That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture, here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Support for WHYY comes from PNC Wealth Management, helping customers live achievement by crafting personalized solutions to grow, preserve, and transfer wealth. More information is available from John Conaway at 215-585-5438.
This is Radio Times.
This is Radio Times.
I'm Marty Moss-Cohen.
I'm Marty Moss-Cohen.
We're talking about Apple.
We're talking about Apple.
And apps.
And apps.
Today on the show.
Today on the show.
Our guests are Chloe Albanesius.
Our guests are Chloe Albanesius.
And Jared Hill.
Jared Hill.
And speaking of apps.
And speaking of apps.
This is a really silly one.
This is a really silly one.
It's called Talking Tom.
It's called Talking Tom.
And he's really silly.
And he's really silly.
Well, that was embarrassing, but an app that's on my my personal computer device, talking about apps and Apple and personal computers and personal telecommunication devices with Jared Hill, web designer, host of the podcast, The Daily App Show, and Chloe Albanesius, managing editor for news at PC Magazine. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Jared, what happens? We're talking about 25 billion apps that have been downloaded. What happens to the apps that no one uses anymore? They just disappear? They're gone? Into a museum somewhere?
Well, no, there's no museum of fallen apps. However,
not yet, anyway.
Our website definitely has some fallen apps and that, you know, once had a little bit of a user base. But that is an issue, you know, when an app is either free or 99 cents or definitely under, you know, $5 as most apps are, how long can these developers, you know, keep up on these apps with such a small revenue stream, in a sense? I mean, we're used to computer programs costing, you know, a lot, and some of these apps, if they were a computer program 5 years ago, would cost, you know, $50 to $100, so.
So what's in that museum?
Well, that digital museum. I should have made a list of some apps that I've seen disappear. There have been some decent ideas, but I think what it all comes down to is just getting the word out there, and that's the problem, is that, you know, a great app can exist, and if it isn't found by a media source or somebody who has a voice to get it out there, the app can easily fall by the wayside.
Pretty crowded, and I'm assuming word of mouth, at least on the internet, can have some kind of impact.
Oh, it could have a huge impact, especially when, you know, the iPhone first came out. A lot of apps took off because, you know, people were talking about them online.
Let me go back to you, Chloe, and I know there's some talk about Apple TV. As you said, Apple's pretty secretive about this stuff, but what are you hearing?
Yeah, well, that came out last year about an actual Apple television set, and it was a bit of a tidbit in the Steve Jobs biography. Right. I guess Steve Jobs had discussed the fact that, you know, the next thing that he wanted to explore was producing an actual television set from Apple. And of course, Apple hasn't said anything, but, you know, rumors have ramped up in recent months about, you know, the company exploring production options overseas, and we might see one by year's end.
Oh, wow.
I imagine it would, you know, look somewhat like an iMac and, you know, incorporate the existing Apple TV set-top box, which is, you know, kind of pulls in, you know, Apple media and content.
And TVs are, you know, more and more, you know, computers marrying TVs, that it's all coming together into one big piece of machinery.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it remains to be seen if, you know, Apple would have the same success as they do with their mobile devices. Because, I mean, Apple TV, they've said, is somewhat of a hobby, the set-top box. So it's not as big a success as, you know, the iPhone or the iPad, but, you know, they've done well with the tablet, so if they certainly do have the resources, so might as well try it out if they can.
Right, and we're talking about the most valuable company in the world today. They have something like $100 billion in cash reserves.
Yeah, something ridiculous. Like $97 billion just sitting around. And Simcoe talked about that recently, said that, you know, they're thinking about what they want to do with that there, but they don't want to go crazy and, you know, just, you know, buy a random company or invest in something that might not pay off. So they'll have more details soon.
Interesting problem to have in these troubled times. Let me get some more callers in on the conversation. And lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Looks like we have Erin from Lafayette Hill joining us on Radio Times. And Erin, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to share my favorite app and my husband's favorite app is My Congress, because it allows you to check and see how your congressmen have been voting and what's actually going on Capitol Hill, so you can kind of cut through some of the misinformation that flies around about how politicians are voting on the issues you care about. And I don't have any questions. I just wanted to share that.
No, I'm glad you did. Erin, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me give Jared Hill a chance to weigh in on that. Jared?
Yeah, there's we've reviewed a couple of apps that allow you to do that, keep up on what's going on in politics. There's a lot of good information out there in some of these apps, some of them very specific, and I think it's a good thing. I think people should have something like this on their device and pay attention to what's going on. The app that we've actually reviewed on our website is just called Congress, and it's a very powerful app.
In what way, Jared?
Well, it allows you to view pretty much information about every single congressman, the Senate, House representatives. You can search information about them, get access to their exact website, their mailing address, their phone number. I mean, all sorts of information feeds for their campaign news, their financing. I mean, everything that you wanted to know about any representative you could find in this app.
And we're talking about more than 500 people.
Yeah, it's a huge resource. I was kind of blown away. This app actually came out quite a while ago, and it's just continued to be good. It's pretty much rated 5 stars and continues to just stay, you know, up at the top of, well, I mean, it's the number one app if you search the word Congress in the App Store.
And it's called just simply Congress.
Yeah, there's a couple different versions. They even have some state-specific versions if you're only interested in your state. But if you do a search in the App Store for Congress, and you'll find it. It's got a picture of the American flag with the White House in the middle of it.
Oh, fair enough. Erin, thanks for the call to Radio Times. We're talking about some of the apps that we like and enjoy, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get to, it looks like, Christine from Wilmington to join our conversation. And Christine, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. My favorite app right now is actually a very expensive application. I work with kids with a variety of disabilities that don't allow them to speak, and we've kind of decided to use ProLoquo to go for the last few years, and it costs $189 out of the box. But their updates over the last few years have only made the product better and better. Until this year, we're expecting an update that'll make it a viable communication device, much more so than the iPad has turned out to be.
Well, that's fascinating. And is it a matter of people hitting a keyboard and then it gets translated into voice?
Yes, so there's a group of picture symbols or different symbols that stand for a word or phrase, and with the new, there are new devices that allow a person to use the iPad with only a switch, so somebody who physically can't manipulate the iPad even with its built-in accessibility can have it scan through a number of choices, and then they can hit the one they want, and it'll speak for them.
Oh, that's fascinating, Christine. Let me give Chloe Albanesius a chance to weigh in. Chloe, go ahead.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about using the iPad for people with disabilities, or even if it's children with autism who, you know, can't verbalize, they can use the, you know, the touchpad or touchscreen of the iPad, and it's really, you know, been of use to them.
Yeah, Jared, do you want to weigh in on that as well?
Yeah, I just saw an article the other day about the iPad giving a boy a chance to to voice himself at his bar mitzvah. And, I mean, devices like this are just becoming more and more integrated into our lives because it's a form factor that can be mobile and enough power under the hood to do things like this. It's really quite amazing.
And exciting as well. Thanks for calling into Radio Times to see what Michael from Woodbury, New Jersey has to say. And Michael, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
I was wondering which is the best app to use for comparing prices while shopping for electronics and other devices?
Well, let me toss that first to Chloe at PC Magazine. Do you have an answer for Michael?
I might not be the best person, but I know certain apps like Amazon has one where you can use the scanner on your camera phone, and it'll tell you if you can get it online a bit cheaper. But I imagine there'd be other options as well.
Yeah, Jared, do you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, there are. I'm a huge Amazon shopper. However, there are apps that you can use even while you're in store shopping, some of these barcode readers that will give you prices online to compare. You could just go into the App Store and search, and you'll find a dozen apps. The barcode scanner that I use is called Red Laser. That one will even compare. Even if you don't have a barcode, you can just do a search, and it will actually give you local places that you can buy the product, or on a list of online places you can buy the product as well.
Michael, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let's see what Jennifer from Portland, Maine has to say. And Jennifer, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
I was just calling because the very fact that I'm listening to you is because of an iPhone app. I live in Maine, as you just said, and while I love Maine Public Radio, we don't actually have a large enough market up here to afford some of the more interesting or expensive shows. And so I learned from an ex-boyfriend, and it was the only good thing I got out of him, is that you guys had an NPR app. And once I learned that there was an NPR app, I work from home, and I have iPhone docking stations all over the place, so wherever I happen to go with my laptop, I drop my iPhone in there, and I can listen to whatever NPR station I want all day long. And I listen to you almost every day. And I also enjoy KQED and
sure.
WBUR because you have news programming or current events, things like that, whereas right now, while I love MPBN, they're playing classical music right now, and that doesn't hold my interest very much.
Well, a shameless plug, and we appreciate that. Appreciate the call to Radio Times, Jennifer.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much. And Jared, I think her call raises such an important point, which is that people are more and more in control of the news and information that they want. They don't have, they're not locked into a certain radio station or even a certain program somewhere, that they can pick and choose what they want.
That's very true. I'm a huge fan of NPR app, and I use that when I'm on the road, sometimes even over my XM, because it gives me access to any NPR channel I wanted. But as far as aggregating my own news, obviously we all have specific interests, and there's lots of different places we can find our news these days. And so there are apps that allow you to kind of create your own news feed, mostly articles and video, but allows you to aggregate your own news feed based on your specific interests.
Let me get to Dan from Kensington to join our conversation. And Dan, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. I was just wanted to make one point, and
go
I
ahead.
Had one question, and that is the laborers in Taiwan, according to the earlier NPR broadcast, that they're not allowed to strike.
Let me just correct you there. It's not Taiwan. It's mainland China.
Mainland China.
Yeah. Two different countries. Yeah, go ahead.
And my question was what are the possibilities of a crash, or a bubble forming around the apps like the .com?
What do you mean by bubble?
In terms of investing in apps and stuff and things falling out, like that would happen back in the late 90s.
I think I understand what you're saying. You're talking about, a bubble in that it sort of explodes and falls apart, like a housing bubble? And with fair enough. Let me see what Jared Hill has to say. Do you think there's the possibility of that, Jared?
Well, I think just like it was with websites and the internet, you know, there was a ton of interest flowing into something, and then it kind of went upside down. However, mobile has such a huge following over what the internet had back then. You know, we weren't spending the kind of money that we are today on stuff, on mobile apps and just that whole industry, like in comparison to the internet back then. So I think that that's just going to grow. More and more people are getting, you know, smartphones in their hands, and so businesses and the companies with the money are going to continue to pour their resources into getting their information. So I don't think that there could be like a burst like that. I think that a lot of people are spending money on apps that and companies that don't necessarily need to, and so there will be a lot of people that might back out because they've realized that it might not have been the best decision to pour their resources in the way that they did. But I can just see things growing and continuing to become more of a mobile platform.
Well, on that note, my thanks to both of you for joining us today in Radio Times. Jared Hill, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And he's a web designer, host of the podcast, The Daily App Show. Chloe Albanesius, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Managing editor for news at PC Magazine. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to learn much more about this program. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. We'll be right back.